If you would open right away to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11 will be our text for this morning. And it's quite a passage. So we're going to read these 11 verses to begin, and I'm going to point out some things. When you look at a passage of Scripture kind of fresh and you haven't studied it, it's a lot of words, right? And they, you know, the things don't pop out at you until you keep reading over it and meditating on it. So what I want to do here in just the first couple minutes is read over it, but then help you to see what should pop, if you will. So, chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, starting in verse 1. Solomon is speaking, and he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of men. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept from my heart no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. Lord, reveal to us the power of this poetry this morning. May your word speak to our lives in a very fresh and powerful way through the work of your Holy Spirit. Illumine us now, we pray, in Christ's name. Amen. All right. Just read it, hopefully with the proper amount of inflection. Now, let me help you to see the words that should pop out from the page. First, in verses 1 and 11, do you see the word behold? Verse 1 and verse 11 are the bookends for these verses. And what you have after the word behold is Solomon's conclusion. His conclusion about what? Well, we'll hopefully make that pop in just a second. But what you read after the word behold in verse 1 and behold in verse 11 is Solomon's conclusion at the end of his research. This is what he determined. Now, what is it that he was researching? He tells you that in verse 1 and in verse 11. Look at the first line of verse 1. I said in my heart, here's what he's going to research. He's going to work on a PhD on this. Come now, I will test you with pleasure. I'm diving all the way in. I'm going to go for every kind of pleasure that anyone could ever imagine. And I'm going to see if any or all of those types or ways of pleasure will give me satisfaction. We're thousands of years removed from Solomon, but this study is just as relevant today as it was back then. Ooh. Are we not living this very question? What are we trying to get pleasure from? Solomon tests everything and then draws conclusions. He says, enjoy yourself. To himself, he says, enjoy yourself. Then you get down to verse 11. He says, then I considered all that my hands had done after all this years of pleasuring himself in every way. I considered all that my hands had done and the toil that I had expended in doing it. And we're not going to read and focus on the conclusions yet, okay? So we're not really going to look at the bottom part of verse 1 or of verse 11. We've already read it. I think you know where we're going, but I don't know if you can understand the journey yet until the rest of it, if you will, pops. So how should I, what can I do to make it pop? Well, there are 8 tests here. You read down through this section, and if you're careful, you'll see 8 different types of pleasure that Solomon is going to test. Now, this isn't all the different ways that someone could try to get satisfaction. How do I know that? Because the chapter isn't finished. He's going to do some more in what we'll look at, Lord willing, next week. Okay, but look at the 8 different tests. In fact, I have them a square around each one of them in my Bible. If you have a pencil or maybe a pen and want to mark it in your Bible, you're welcome to. In verse 2, we have test number 1. I said of laughter, comedy. If I could just laugh my troubles away, can I? If I imbibe and all the best, you know, comedians, will it work? Will that bring joy to my heart? Test number 2. I searched with all my heart how to cheer my body with wine. Will alcohol, or we could add drugs, even though he doesn't, same idea. Will giving myself to alcohol wash away life's worries? Can I get satisfaction in that? Test number 3. I built houses. What if I could have, what if you had, you know, any amount of houses and anything in it? And then, test number 4, vineyards, gardens, parks, fruit trees, making an absolutely lavish Garden of Eden for yourself. Test number 5, unlimited amount of servants for yourself. For Solomon, it was slaves. Today, it would be, you know, domestic servants. Unlimited. To do anything and everything for you. Verse 6, unlimited amount of gold. Silver is junk to Solomon. We're going to read a little section out of 1 Kings and we'll see. Silver doesn't even count to Solomon. That's what he says. Okay, gold is what matters, or does it? Can unlimited wealth bring you pleasure and satisfaction? What about number 7? Just diving into entertainment. You say, where's that? Singers. Men and women. unlimited entertainment. Can I get the satisfaction and fill the emptiness and remove the worry and troubles of my life by just blanking it all out, blocking it all out, and binging on whatever shows or movies or whatever you like? Will that work? And then lastly, the eighth test, women. Or, you know, it could be men, I suppose. But, you know, for Solomon women, concubines, we're going to read a little section out of 1 Kings on that too. Okay? Unlimited physical pleasure, no limits, literally limitless for Solomon. Could he find satisfaction in that? The title of the message this morning is, I can't get no, ... satisfaction. There was a group, I don't know if they're still around or not, named the Rolling Stones. Okay, and this is a song I heard years ago. I haven't listened to, you know, secular rock music since, I don't even know when, 80s? I mean, so there was this secular rock group back then, maybe still today, I don't know, who nailed it. They did the exact same thing that Solomon did. And the words of their song, and I'm only going to just have a little bit of it, I've skipped some of it, but the words of their song, I mean, if you could, like, lay them over the top of Ecclesiastes 2, 1 through 11, you'd see many different connections. I mean, here is one of the wealthiest rock bands in history, one of the best known. I mean, basically, they walk in anywhere, and people know who they are, and I don't know about anymore, but at least back then. And here are the words to their song, and really, I think you can feel the emptiness in the hearts of these musicians when you hear these words. Here it is. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. 'Cause I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't get no. I can't get no. When I'm driving in my car, and the man come on the radio, he's telling me more and more about some useless information supposed to fire my imagination. I can't get no. Oh, no, no, no. Hey, 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 that's what I say. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction. 'Cause I try and I try and I try. I can't get no. I can't get no. And I'm skipping stuff, okay? When I'm riding around the world and I'm doing this and I'm signing that and I'm trying to make some girl who tells me, baby, better come back maybe next week. Can't you see I'm on a losing streak? Yeah. I mean, they're figuring it out. They're figuring out the same thing that Solomon thousands of years ago figured out. The last line that I'll read to you, I can't get no. Oh, no, no, no. Hey, 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 that's what I say. I can't get no. I can't get no. I can't get no satisfaction. No satisfaction. No satisfaction. No satisfaction. I can't get no. That's how the song ends. That's exactly what Solomon is saying in Ecclesiastes 2, 1 through 11. I can't get no satisfaction. I want you to imagine for a minute that you are the smartest person on this earth. I think right now the smartest person on this earth has an IQ of about 600, somewhere in that range, which is, you know, way up there. You are now the smartest person on the earth. You are the wisest person on this planet. And you have just become the wealthiest individual who has ever lived in history. You have trillions, not billions, of dollars at your disposal. And it's all fresh, new wealth for you. You can now obtain anything. What do you want? You want a 747 decked out, brand new, just for you, all the bedrooms and lavish whatever, TVs and everything else. You want a massive yacht, biggest private yacht ever made, 3 helicopter pad. What do you want? What do you want to put on it? You can put anything you want on your yacht. You can go to any 5-star restaurant on earth, and you know what? You can drop any amount of money at that restaurant, and it doesn't even faze you. You don't care. You're like J-Lo. If you don't know who that is, it's Jennifer Lopez. You're like J-Lo, whose favorite restaurant costs her $10,000 for one meal for 2 people. Yeah, that's her favorite restaurant. She goes there a lot, I'm told, I read. You say, that's not enough. I want more. All right, why don't you go to, this restaurant, $25,000 dessert, the world's most expensive dessert. Maybe I'll tell you more about it later. You can go, doesn't matter. Literally, money doesn't matter. It absolutely doesn't. I know we live like that, but for just a moment, it doesn't even matter. No amount of money matters. You can drop any amount, spend anything. Who cares? You don't. Houses, you want 7 cars, you want a Bugatti Veyron, it costs $220,000 to $230,000 per year just for the maintenance on one car. Yeah. You don't care. It doesn't matter. You have all the wealth you could possibly want. Imagine every trip you want to take, anything you want to, some of the ladies, the pedicures, manicures, you want the full body massages, everything, anything, hot tubs, you name it, it's all yours. All of it. Whoa, you'd say, I might want to try that. That wouldn't be so bad. Well, you know what? Someone did try it. And he looked for satisfaction in all of the things that I just mentioned and more. And do you know what he concludes in verses 1 through 11? It is this. The pursuit of pleasure will always leave you feeling empty. You say, I don't know about that. No, it's absolutely true. And those of us who have enough experience, we know this is true. I'm going to say it again. The pursuit of pleasure will always leave you feeling empty. How can we be sure that Solomon was right? It's because the wisest man who ever lived tested the 8 types of pleasure. Here they are. Verse 2, we've already pointed them out. Do it again now and discuss them a little bit, each one. I said of laughter, what is his conclusion? Does laughter, does comedy, laughing, can an extraordinary amount of comedy bring me the kind of satisfaction I need to cause all the cares of life to go away? I know people who are big time into comedy because they're trying to get exactly what we're talking about, satisfaction out of the comedy. And they'll even watch or listen to comedy that's really ribald and really doesn't have any business in a Christian's life because they're still searching for more. And the rest, what they have, the Christian comedians, it just isn't enough. They go to some that are really disgusting and even listen to that. And you know what? They still find the same thing that Solomon did. I mean, he had court jesters, I'm sure, comedians, the best in the business. He hired them all. And it wasn't, something that, he watched with the crowd. This is for the private enjoyment of himself and maybe whatever wife or concubine he had with him, that evening and maybe a few friends. I mean, he hired Johnny Carson, David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, Richard Pryor, Woody Allen, Rodney Dangerfield, Bill Cosby, Eddie Murphy, Jerry Seinfeld, Robin Williams, Jay Leno, Jim Carrey, etc., etc., to do live performances. every single night for a while anyway, and it didn't work. It didn't work. Could nonstop laughter help Solomon forget his troubles and the emptiness in his soul? Test number two, it's in verse 3. I searched with all my energy, my whole heart, all my energy, I poured it in. Didn't hold it, hold back. How to cheer my body with wine. Solomon tried to satisfy his soul and forget his problems with alcohol. Put this way, is there happiness in happy hour? Solomon, why do you think happy hour is right after work? Yeah, because all the people have problems at work. Let's just go for happy hour. Did it work? Did he get the kind of satisfaction that he longed for? Solomon says he tested alcohol to see if it would help him deal with the difficult emotions of life. But he says, and I quote, he tested alcohol with my heart still guiding me with wisdom. He says he maintained self-control. Now, you can't maintain self-control when you're drunk, so what he's saying is he tried drinking and getting drunk multiple times, but he never became a drunkard. He maintained self-control. He didn't allow himself to become a drunkard. Did alcohol help Solomon drown out the pressures of life and provide a meaningful happiness the next day? We know what happens, right? Okay. I mean, some of you have fortunately never experienced it. Some of us have, but we know what the next day is like. I mean, you drink alcohol and it dehydrates your body, and so your brain hurts the next morning, sometimes really badly. You get sick. I mean, you just feel rotten. Why would you do that again to yourself? Well, there is some temporary pleasure, and that's what Solomon's going to say in verses 9 through 11. There's a little bit of very fleeting temporary pleasure, but does it bring the satisfaction that he was needing, searching for? Test number three, it's in verse 4. I made great works. Let's divide these into a couple of categories. One, the houses, and two, the gardens. First, the houses. I mean, for Solomon, this is as good, if not better, than the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Solomon even had Jeff Bezos beat. I mean, he had so much more money than Bezos. I mean, Bezos can basically buy anything on earth. My favorite secular book that I've ever read is called The Count of Monte Cristo, and it's a massive book. And it's an investment of time. I read it years and years ago. I saw the movie adaptation of it with Jim Caviezel, one of my favorite actors. And, when you go into Edmonds, he's enacting his revenge on the people who treated him badly and put him to prison. He escapes prison. He finds this incredible treasure because a priest who had also been in prison knew where it was hidden. So Edmond goes and gets the treasure and becomes literally the wealthiest person alive. And the three people who did him wrong, he's going to enact revenge, deep hatred for these people, and he does. I like the movie version better than the book because there's a happy ending in the movie version. The book does not have a happy ending. In fact, I don't like that part. Dumas was Spanish, and in that day you didn't have to have the American happy ending, and it's not a happy ending for him. But you know what? In the movie, the way that they picture the mansions of Edmond, the one in France and then the one in Italy, if you've seen the movie, and then these are real locations, by the way. I mean, they're incredible. I don't know where either one of them is. I don't know whose mansion it was where they did the filming, but they are clearly real, and they are amazing. Solomon tried to satisfy his soul with palaces, more than one, because you can see it's the word plural, houses, palaces, more than one. Did that satisfy? He also tried the gardens. He replanted the Garden of Eden. Look at the words. Vineyards, gardens, parks, fruit trees. I made pools, you know, the beautiful reflecting pools in the middle, and used those even better to, you know, to water the growing forest of trees that he had planted. I mean, we're talking the recreation as best as man can do of the Garden of Eden. It's like Nebuchadnezzar's hanging gardens. I mean, of Babylon, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. This place was gorgeous. What's the prettiest place you've ever visited? For me, just like sheer beauty, natural beauty, it was a restaurant on a mountaintop in Taiwan. I mean, I have never seen, even in my memory, it seems fake. It seems like a movie to me rather than real, even though I was there. I mean, the mountains were okay. I mean, they were pretty, but I mean, I've seen better mountains. But man, it was the way that the proprietors of this restaurant manicured the area. Every blade of grass, the way the flowers were, the reflecting pools and the types of swans they have there, and on and on and on. It was absolutely the prettiest place. I've been to a lot of places. This was the prettiest place I've ever seen. You would have loved it had you been there, especially if you like gardens and flowers. Solomon probably had that beat. This was just a fairly small little area. Solomon's, I'm sure, was much, much larger and probably just as, if not more, grand. He planted his own little Garden of Eden, his own paradise. Sheer beauty. Did that satisfy? Test number five. He tried to satisfy his soul, according to verse 7, by buying slaves to attend to even his slightest needs. Lots of them, male slaves, female slaves. They had children, and the slaves of slaves born in his household. Unlimited. There was nothing of a menial sense that he could do that he didn't hire a slave for everything. It's like the royal family in England today. I read an book review of a book written by a British researcher on the royal family. And a lot of it is very positive, and you know, he paints the royal family in a fairly good light, but Prince Charles, he didn't hold any punches. I mean, he interviewed all kinds of people, and basically, all of the hired servants in whatever it's Buckingham or wherever Prince Charles is, they hate him. I mean, Prince Charles, to give you an idea, he will not even put the toothpaste on his own toothbrush. And if the servant doesn't do it exactly like he likes, he will have a complete temper tantrum meltdown. It was talked about in the summary. I mean, literally, if the servant doesn't put the toothpaste on the toothbrush exactly like he likes it, he will scream at them and have a complete meltdown. Yeah, it's true. I mean, these things aren't fake. This is the way power, money, wealth doesn't satisfy. You know where you end up getting if you're trying to get satisfaction out of having some of the world's largest art collections and best palaces? You walk in anywhere and everybody's supposed to bow or wave or whatever. You are the man or the woman or whatever. You're king or prince or queen or whatever. You know where that ends up leading you? If that's what you're really trying to squeeze satisfaction out of, it ends up, because you eventually realize when you have everything that you don't have anything. You don't even have a real friend. You don't have anyone who cares. That's, you talk about what really matters. In the conclusion, we'll talk about that. I don't think Prince Charles has anything that really matters, and he's tried all the things that Solomon tried, and you know what? That's what it can do to you. So I'm not casting the first stone at him. I feel sorry for him. I really do. This is what happens. Test number six. Test number six is in verses 7 and 8. Solomon tried to satisfy his soul by spending lavishly. And he not only could spend lavishly, he could build the biggest 401k that anyone's ever seen. You, Now, he has his cake and he eats it too. He can spend unbelievable amounts of money and save unbelievable amounts of money. Usually that doesn't go hand in hand. No, most people don't have that kind of cash. He did. And you know what? What did he find? Let's look at it again. I want to actually turn to 1 Kings chapter 10 and read some verses here to give you an idea of what Solomon actually had. This is mind-blowing. First Kings 10, verse 14. Now, the weight of gold, notice how many times the word gold comes up in this reading. The weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. Besides that, which came from the explorers and from the business of the merchants, and from all the kings of the west, and from the governors of the land. In other words, all the tribute. So he's getting this much, plus on top of the 666 talents of gold that's coming in, his explorers are getting gold for him, his businesses are making tons of money, the kings of the west and the governors of the land are paying tribute to him. Gold, 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 money, money, money coming in. He's like King Midas almost. Verse 16, King Solomon made. Okay, what do you want to do with all your gold, King Solomon? What do you want to do? Spend it lavishly. You got more than you're ever going to be able to need in your 401k. So, you know, enjoy. King Solomon made 200 large shields of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went into each one. He made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 minas of gold went into each shield. And the king put them in one of his mansions, the house of the forest of Lebanon, his summer cottage. All right. The king also made a great ivory throne and overlaid it with the finest gold. I think the idea is maybe inlaid it. In other words, he didn't cover the ivory with gold all the way around, but he inlaid it so that the beauty of the carved ivory and the gold accoutrements, just a dazzling throne. But that's not all he did. Look at the rest of the throne here. Great ivory throne, overlaid it with the finest gold. The throne had 6 steps. And at the back of the throne was a calf's head. And on each side of the seat were armrests and 2 lions standing beside the armrests. While 12 lions stood there, one on each end of the 6 steps, and the like of it was never made in any kingdom. What do you want to spend your money on, Solomon? You have unlimited. You can do anything you want. Are you going to be happy? Would you be happy with all that money? Would it make you happy? Could it make you happy? Could the things you're pursuing right now, can they bring pleasure? Can they bring satisfaction? Verse 22, for the king had a fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory. What do you want, Solomon? Oh, how about some apes and some peacocks? Yeah, kind of be cool to have them around the house in my gardens. Yeah. Take a few of those and some others too. Thus, King Solomon excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. The whole earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put into his mind. Every one of them brought in his present articles of silver and gold, garments, myrrh, spices, horses, mules, so much year by year. And Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he stationed in the chariot cities and with the king in Jerusalem. I wish I could talk to you about the 3 big chariot cities, the forward operating bases in his kingdom, and how powerful that made him. We don't have time for all that. Even military might. I mean, unbelievable. He could spend any amount of money. He could do all, anything. And the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stone. And he made cedar as plentiful as the sycamore of the Shephelah, the rolling hill part of Israel. And Solomon's import of horses, the finest steeds, you know, to ride and to enjoy and to have on his personal chariot and more and in his entourage. Solomon's import of horses was from Egypt and Kew, and the king's traders received them from Kew at a price. They paid up. He got the best thoroughbreds. Nothing else would do. Verse 29, a chariot could be imported from Egypt for 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. And so, through the king's traders, they were exported to all the kings of the Hittites and the kings of Syria. That is, all of Solomon's tribute-paying kingdoms. Are you jealous? Do you find yourself wishing that you had just a little more? Maybe that would bring satisfaction. How about a lot more? This would be like owning the largest estate on your own private beach. What island do you want to pick? Hawaii? A huge, totally remodeled, all up-to-date, incredible castle on, where do you want to put it? Mountaintop in Switzerland? Overlooking a beautiful lake? Like being able to blow $10,000 on a meal or spend an unbelievable amount of money on the frozen Hout chocolate ice cream sundae that costs $25,000. Now, I'm not making that up. That's at Serendipity 3, a restaurant in New York City. For the teens here who gotta have their cool tennis shoes, try these on for size. How about the old people here, they don't even know what I'm talking about. Okay, it's like a foreign language, but the teens will. How about the Nike Air Yeeza 2 Red October pair? Yeah, you want to look cool to your friends? Try on a pair of those for size. $8,400 for that pair of Nikes. But you know what? Them's junk to Solomon. He would have probably bought the Nike Air Mags because those are $14,999. I'm not making that up. I don't know why they don't just make it $15,000. You're going to spend $14,999. I don't think $1 is going to matter in how much, you know. $15,000 on a pair of shoes, you can spend any amount you want. Beloved, do you see where Solomon's going? Do you see where maybe your own heart is? Could we use the word feeling? Solomon here, you on the same wavelength as he is? You wanting kind of like some of the, all right, you don't need all of what he had. Yeah, but you know, it's a little more than what I have. Look, isn't that always it? I just need a little more. Maybe I need one more vacation. I need a little bit better vehicle. I need a bit bigger house. I need a little bit better clothes. I need a lot more. Maybe you're a dreamer and not just a more practical person. You don't just want a little more. You'd really like a lot more. Why? Because don't we all think that having these things is going to make us happy and joyful? We might think these things would bring us lasting pleasure, satisfaction, and fulfillment in life. But in reality, trying to get satisfaction out of the things of this world is like trying to, the old phrase, squeeze blood out of a turnip. Where did that phrase come from? Probably from Genesis chapter 4. Because, you know, Abel had the animal sacrifice that God required because he was a keeper of the sheep and livestock. So he could offer an animal that had blood and that pleased God. Cain, on the other hand, killed his brother. Why? Because Cain didn't have the animals. All he did was grow the crops, and that's probably where squeezing blood out of a turnip comes from. If Cain could have squeezed the red turnip and gotten the blood that would have satisfied God in his anger toward the sin of man, he would have done it. Are we not trying to squeeze, not a turnip and to get blood, but squeeze satisfaction out of the things of this world? What are you trying to squeeze to try to get satisfaction? Test number 7, Solomon tried to satisfy his soul with entertainment. Solomon enjoyed private music concerts with the best groups of his day any time he wanted. Do you enjoy going to live concerts? I don't. Okay? I'm just not that kind of person. Most are. I'm just not. I don't enjoy going to any kind of live concert, whatever, classical. I don't like it. I was ruined in college. They tried to force me to be cultured, and it backfired. So I don't like going to concerts or doing anything, but some of you do. What if you didn't? Look, you don't even have to go to concerts. You can have the, Solomon did, you can have all of the entertainers come to your place and entertain you privately. I know, I will not give away even a hint of who this might be, but I know of a ministry couple who overnight became extremely wealthy. That's all I want to say about them in particular, because I don't want to give it away. I don't even know if anybody here would know who they are. But a couple in ministry who became extremely wealthy overnight, literally, within a fairly short time. They were out of ministry within a fairly short time. I mean, their lives degraded. It's not good. And I haven't heard anything for a long time now. But, I mean, I know, for example, they did exactly what Solomon's doing here to try to squeeze satisfaction out of life. They hired, you remember the river dance, the cloggers and all the things, that river dance thing? They hired the river dance people to come and entertain them at their new mansion that had a, you know, whatever, place to perform in it, and on and on and on. No satisfaction, no pleasure. Mm-mm. No, it just ruined their lives. Been better if they had nothing. They were better off when they had nothing. Test number 8, the last test in this part of the section of chapter 2, because there are more tests later. But test number 8 is this. He tried to satisfy his soul with the physical pleasure of beautiful women. And I'll be very careful what I say here. But when it says in verse 8, the delight of the children of men, it means that these women were delightful. That is stunningly beautiful as any women could be. So how many women are we talking about? Couldn't Solomon get satisfaction out of really, really, really beautiful women? 1 Kings, if you're still there, chapter 11. 1 Kings 11, verses 1 through 4. Let's read about what Solomon had in terms of all these women. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women. From the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God. He wasn't completely gone, okay, but his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. David made similar mistakes, but just, you know, a couple by comparison with the amount of mistakes that Solomon, supposedly the wisest man who ever lived, made. Of course, he was the wisest man. I'm not doubting Scripture, but the way he lived his life, I think that's why he is so well qualified to write about wisdom and the choices we make, because he tried them all And that's what he's telling us today. It would have taken Solomon 3 years to visit each one of these women. This was a cruel way to treat these women, wasn't it? He didn't love all of them. I mean, some of them. I'm sure he couldn't even remember all their names. Probably most of them he didn't remember their names. They were just objects of pleasure for him. It's kind of like the autobiography of Wilt Chamberlain, great basketball player of yesteryear. I mean, I used to respect him until I found out more about his life. He disgusts me. He brags about sleeping with over 10,000 women in his autobiography. Why would you say such a thing? Disgusting. Did he find satisfaction? No. You have to appreciate Solomon's honesty. Solomon was, because he calls himself the preacher in the book, Solomon was the preacher who stepped on his own toes. And his conclusion is in verses 9 through 11. So if you're not there, turn back to Ecclesiastes 2. Verse 9 says, "So I became great and surpassed all." You know the passage in the New Testament that talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life? Look for it in these verses. "So I became great and surpassed all." There's the pride of life. "Who were before me in Jerusalem, also my wisdom remained with me." So he didn't lose his mind. He just tested all these things. Verse 10, "And whatever my eyes desired," there's the lust of the eyes, "whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure," there's the lust of the flesh, "in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil." Okay, so there was momentary pleasure from these things. I mean, why else would people eat too much food, right? Because it tastes good. Why else would people go on another trip? Now look, there's nothing wrong with eating good food. God, I think, gave us the taste buds so that we would enjoy it. But if we try to get too much out of it, what happens? Ramifications. Whether it's trips, whether it's physical pleasure of any kind, all these things. There is a temporary reward, Solomon says. But verse 11 is a conclusion. "Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it." And here's our word, behold, just like in verse 1. This is where it turns. After all these tests, here's my conclusion. "Behold, all was but a breath, a vapor." It's vanity, but the idea is probably better. Just a poof. The pleasure just went poof. It's like the kid who opens a Christmas present, you know, Christmas morning, and by the end of the evening, not playing with it, never touches it again. That's what he or she wanted, and now they play with it for a few hours, and then they never play with it again. Oh, mommy, daddy, so awesome. And then 3 hours later, never playing with it again. Build the big fort in the woods up in the tree and have ropes and everything. And I did. I actually did this. Do the kids play with it? About three times. All that work, and they didn't even play with it. Like, come on. Oh, daddy was doing his duty and all this. And Just vanity, just fleeting. It's like trying to grab a hold of the wind, trying to get satisfaction out of any of these eight different types of pleasure is like trying to grab a hold of the wind. Can you grab a hold of the wind? No. Can you get pleasure out of comedy, out of alcohol, with multiple houses? Can you get pleasure by recreating incredible surroundings like the Garden of Eden? Can you get pleasure by having tons of servants to do everything so that you don't have to do anything at all? Say, that might be kind of nice. Really? What about just spending lavishly and then building a 401k too and never having to worry ever, not even a little bit about money, and no amount that you could ever spend is ever going to in any way endanger you fiscally, ever, no matter how much you spend? What if you had that much money? Would that do it for you? Would it satisfy you? Would you be happy and joyful? Entertainment. Unbelievable entertainment. Binging on whatever you want as often as you want. You don't have to go to work if you don't want to. Physical pleasure, beauty of women, all this kind of stuff. All these things. What does Solomon say? It's just fleeting. It's like striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. That refrain, under the sun. We've talked about that already. Nothing to be gained. Nothing. Nothing. You get it, and it ends up being, it's just gone. It's gone. How much is enough? The super rich Rockefeller was asked. Just one more dollar. Solomon's answer was very different from Rockefeller's. He said, no amount of things that this world can ever provide will ever be enough. Look back at the beginning of each verse. What do you see? Look at how many I's, me's, my's, and myself's you see. There are 18 I's, 13 my's, 4 me's, and 4 myself's in this paragraph. Solomon was self-absorbed, selfish, narcissistic, hedonistic. Compare that with the wisdom of Paul in Colossians 3:2. Set your minds on things above, not on the things of the earth. There's nothing wrong with the things of this earth. They're used and appreciated properly. God even gave us senses to enjoy the things of the earth. But it's when we pursue the things of the earth instead of pursuing Him that it all disintegrates. What we work so hard to gain, all the toil, Solomon says, it's gone like a whiff of steam off the cup of coffee that you poured this morning. 1 Corinthians 10:31 tells us how to do it. Whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. You want satisfaction in life? Do all, everything in life, including eating and drinking, including working and buying whatever you feel like you want to buy or need, or trips you want to take, or, you know, getting the pedicure you want, or whatever it is, however you want to spend your money. As long as you are doing it for the glory of God, you know what's going to happen? If you're pursuing any one of those things for the satisfaction it will give, but if you pursue those things for the glory of God, do you know what will happen? There will, because we haven't gotten to any of the conclusions we did on Sunday night last week. So those who came on Sunday night heard the conclusions. We put all the conclusion statements together, and it was incredible, powerful, when you put them all together in Ecclesiastes. So you know, a lot of you missed that, but we'll get to them individually. But when you put them all together, we won't be able to do that, you know, on Sunday mornings. But when you put them all together, whoo-wee, it's incredible. And you know what? All the conclusion statements, and there are about 6 or 7 of them in Ecclesiastes, you know what he's saying? He's basically giving us a pleasure paradox, to quote the commentator O'Donnell. I just bought that commentary this week, and it's a really good one. O'Donnell's commentary says, pleasure paradox. Here's the way I said it. Pursue Christ rather than pleasure, and all pleasure will produce satisfaction. That's 1 Corinthians 10:31. That's the heart of Colossians 3:2. That's the heart of Paul, the wisdom of Paul. That's the wisdom of Solomon. Pursue Christ rather than pleasure, and all pleasure will produce satisfaction. But it's so easy for our heart to long for the pleasure than it is for Christ. The pursuit of pleasure will always leave you feeling empty. The Westminster Shorter Catechism has it absolutely right when it answers this question. What is the chief end of man? Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. He gave us all the things on this earth to enjoy. But we have to put God first, and then all these things will be added unto you. What is it called when we pursue anything other than Christ? Pursue houses, lands, wealth, trips, anything. What is it called when we pursue those things? It is called idolatry, specifically idolatry of the heart. You're not carving an idol, but you might as well. What idols are sitting up on the fireplace mantle in your mind, on your heart? Solomon's tried them all before you, and he said, not a one of them will work. He says, believe me, trust me, listen to me. I'm the preacher. Hear what I have to say. I'm stepping on my own toes. Christ alone satisfies the soul. We started with a horrible song. Let's end with an incredible song. It's from George Beverly Shea. And it goes like this. I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be His than have riches untold. I'd rather have Jesus than houses or lands. I'd rather be led by His nail-pierced hands than to be the King of a vast domain and be held in sin's dread sway. I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world affords today. How about you? Do you want Christ more than anything? Lord Jesus, why do we foolish followers so often stray after the idols of the heart? Why do we long for things that we know innately, if we think about it, cannot, will not satisfy? Oh, Lord, help us to come to this realization. Quit being foolish and wasteful with our time and our resources. Quit being miserable in our lives because the very thing we really want and need is free, and you're always there, ready for us. And yet, we go a-whoring after all these stupid things. Forgive us, Lord. Set our minds, our eyes on the things of heaven, not on the things of this earth, so that whatever we do, eat, drink, anything that we do, may we do it all for Your glory. And then we know that You will take care of all of our needs, because that is what Your Son told us. Dear Lord, thank You for